This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to the closing session. Pascal, the French mathematician and philosopher, once wrote to a friend and said, "My dear friend, this letter would have been much shorter if I had more time." Now, as I said, each of the chairman and chair, 5 minutes to give us a summary, quite a challenging task, of their session, of their stream of sessions today. I'm going to keep from left to right, stream A to stream E. So I'll start off stream A. Peter Young on my right.
That's right, that's my stream. So that was on a fairly loose and broad definition of resource efficiency. I sort of kicked off the session with a view of the Aldersgate's work on resource efficiency looking beyond carbon. That was a fairly sort of wide-ranging, high-level sort of policy. We reviewed how the government was doing so far in terms of its aspiration to be the greenest government ever with respect to resource efficiency. And I think the report says, must try harder, but good intent. We then heard from Duncan Jones of the Hertfordshire Waste Partnership, really good example of the benefits of getting local authorities working together, and a really good example of someone who's obviously astutely avoided the difficulty of the sovereignty issue of when you get local authorities working together, it does lead to the conclusion that at times you perhaps don't need all of the separate organisations there. And I think as we see the comprehensive spending review, that's going to be a recurring theme, as it was through the day for us. We then heard from Steve Kay and from Anglian Water and Nina Sweet from RAP, the Waste and Resources Action Programme, across really the water industry and the waste industry, from particularly a focus on organics, anaerobic digestion and the like. Useless facts you might want to take away was things like we throw away 5.1 million potatoes a day, which I find absolutely mind-boggling, and 4.4 million apples. So that was an excellent, thank you for that, Nina. I remember that one. And we also heard as well how Anglian Water had set targets of 50% reduction in carbon footprint from capital projects and 20% reduction in terms of operating carbon impact. We then moved on with a more general view on sustainability, and particularly in terms of how getting communities involved changes their attitudes, from Paul Marianne. And then we had Roy Hathaway from DEFRA, who's gave us a good review of waste policy under the Waste Framework Directive, which will be due in the spring. But he gave us a bit of an insight about things. And perhaps one oft misunderstood thing, which you hear a lot about, is the zero waste society and objective, and he explained that in some detail. You know, zero waste doesn't mean there won't be any waste. What it means is we aspire to get to the stage that every waste we produce brings back some kind of economic benefit. So effectively there's an economy behind every waste. It isn't just discarded for no use or value. And then we had a final session from David Greenfield of, as I understand it now, you say EASY for the Improvement Efficiency South East Network, and from Catriona Lingwood, who was talking about construction waste from her organisation, which works with the construction industry. And that brought us back to the beginning of the themes, which was really around this fact that the spread of good practice and cooperation between organisations, there's fantastic quantities of value still out there to be had in resource efficiency, but we had to overcome a certain amount of parochialism and reluctance perhaps to learn off one another to do those things. So there we are, that's my attempt in 4.5 minutes. I'll stop there.
Thanks, Peter. Pascal would have been proud of you. David? Stream B, energy efficiency.
We focused on energy efficiency, and for those of you who are here in the opening session, you might remember a question asked as to what extent the move and aim towards a zero carbon economy is consistent with individuals' requirements and aims and ambitions, and to what extent they can be made to marry up and accommodated. And we looked at that initially in the context of a presentation by an architect looking at holistic landscape cities and designs seeking to integrate work and residential lifestyles based on a zero carbon and zero waste solution. It was pointed out that no one historically has tried to reduce demand before trying to make low energy systems work, and there's clearly need to give greater focus on reduction of demand. Furthermore, and taking account of the issues on investment that I raised in opening this morning, it was felt that there's greater need to focus on passive building design as being the main focus for investment and not on individual technologies. The point was forcibly made that it is possible to meet the environmental agenda and add commercial value. And several examples were given where added sales premiums of between 15 and 30% on commercial low energy, zero carbon developments were achieved in comparison to traditional developments. The issue was then looked at how we win hearts and minds, win over the public and indeed volume house builders. And I think the concluding message I'd like to give to you today is that people are obviously are inherently more interested in lifestyle solutions than in engineering, technology or planning issues. And therefore, when we look at engineering solutions, we also need to look at cultural activities and address them in parallel with those solutions. Get people to buy into the benefits and not because of a solution meeting a minimum legal target. We then moved on to a presentation by Bill Butterworth looking at least cost sustainable recycling of food to produce energy, and this compared various anaerobic and aerobic processes. The failure of previous governments to back proven technologies was highlighted. There's been too many instances of failed technologies being invested in and supported. It's better instead to identify required solutions and leave industries to choose technologies that work towards achieving those solutions. The point was also made that, and there's much confusion between renewable and sustainable, they are not the same, and the example was cited of the development of oilseed rape used to drive generators, but what benefit is gained by that if the oilseed rape, as is commonly the case, is grown with mineral fertilisers made and transported using energy. Global warming must be reversed profitably. If not financially sustainable, then something can't be environmentally sustainable. But it was the concluding message that farmland can produce biofuels in quantities enough to make a serious contribution to the national economy. We then had a specific focus on anaerobic digestion by Greg Hilton, where we looked at new AD applications and what is possible, and key issues deriving from that, again, taking into account public footprint, are location of AD plants, local objections, and the case here in the UK was contrasted very strongly with Germany, where you see over 4,000 operable AD plants now working right in the centre of communities. Planning and cultural issues are a real challenge, and of course funding, which we touched on this morning, banks often requiring land or other collateral as security, which in many instances militates against the whole purpose of the developments. We then had a very interesting presentation by the European Space Agency looking at EU policy and citizens and how the ESA is working with the EU in public and public-private partnerships to develop initiatives in space, and which can be transferred to technologies on the ground, and various examples were cited. And the practical instance and example given of the Harwell Centre here in the UK, which is actively supporting space-to-ground technologies. We looked at specific space-to-energy projects, and indeed the greater use of satellites in supporting the development of those technologies across a terrestrial application. We then moved on to look very quickly at operational efficiency through IT and a presentation by Bob Crook of DEFRA and how we can measure footprint, looking at asset types, balance sheets and product service developments, and how they were able to achieve 25% savings through rationalisation and print management and optimisation. Noting as well that through that rationalisation they had been able to reduce over 1,000 different applications down to 300 and reduce servers by over 700 in number. They also focused on increased server virtualisation, reducing the data centre space occupied and therefore power and cooling resources consumed. And that then led finally and very appropriately to a presentation by Sandy Carter of Charity Create, who focus on encouraging energy efficient behavioural change in schools through a couple of case studies to develop and attract that change, you obviously need to attract hooks to get the kids, primary and secondary, to buy into these initiatives, and how they can, through the very interesting phrase that I learned, pester power, impact and encourage us parents to learn what they themselves are achieving in these schools, and very real examples of significant 25-30% reductions in carbon footprint as a result. So a very wide-ranging, interesting day.
Indeed. Thank you, David. Stephanie, environmental efficiency?
Environmental efficiency. Well, if you think that was an exciting and variable day, I'll run you very quickly through the huge range of issues that we talked about in Stream C. So starting off, we had Will Everson, who's an economist at PricewaterhouseCoopers, who discussed the Teeb report on the economics of nature, effectively. So why biodiversity is a boardroom issue, the risks and opportunities for business that become apparent when we actually assess in monetary terms the value of the goods and services provided by the natural world. So we explored that, and we talked about some of the future potential developments like biodiversity offsetting that might come forward, which raised a few interesting issues in itself. I was with the board of a London estate agency last week talking about offsetting, and one of them said to me, well, I suppose I could give £20 to the RSPCA so I didn't feel guilty about kicking the dog, or I could just stop kicking the dog. And I think that was a message that came through loud and clear throughout the rest of the day, really. Following on from Will, we had Charles Hargreaves from the UK Gas and Electricity Regulator, Ofgem, and he talked to us about the renewable obligations and energy efficiency schemes that his department administers and on behalf of the energy generators. And in particular, he talked about the CERT scheme, which will be worth about £1 billion a year until 2012. And he gave us a little tease about the Green Deal, which will follow on from that, which we'll hear more about from government this year. Next, we moved into the food and drinks arena with Andrew Kike from the FDF. Now, Andrew has a job title I don't believe we would have seen 5 years ago, Director of Sustainability and Competitiveness. And I think that's very telling in itself that people are starting to link the two concepts. Now, Andrew talked about what the Food and Drink Federation is doing to reduce the environmental impacts and improve the resource efficiency of their operations. And they have a fivefold agenda around energy, zero waste to landfill, packaging, transport, and water. And I think there were some interesting things there where we kind of understood the things that perhaps we, the consumer, think are important around packaging aren't such huge issues as the huge amount of waste food going to landfill, but they're more important to us emotionally. We're very switched onto that agenda because we don't like to think of ourselves as part of the problem. In the third session then, we focused on transport, and we had two poachers turned gamekeepers to speak to us, both our consultants and recovering oil men. Graham Hilton and Colin Matthews talked in turn about biofuel and vehicle types, and both really agreed that there was no silver bullet on the horizon where one size would fit all. And as they're both consultants like me, they came up with the standby answer to everything: it depends. There's the right fuel and the right vehicle for the right job. Some technologies that have worked in one place were disastrously applied and very quickly withdrawn in others. And other technologies that are really well proven elsewhere in the world seem to be just ignored in the UK at the moment. And then finally, we had a talk on sustainable healthcare from Delny Britton. Delny's a scientist and a qualified homeopath, so she was looking really at both sides of the issue here and took in turn the economic, social, and environmental impacts of our current healthcare system, where really it's the last bastion of more is more, where we're not allowed to question the fact that it would, of course, be wrong to cut back on what we invest into healthcare. But Delny pulled apart those three dimensions of sustainability and analysed really, was that actually delivering proper health outcomes in terms of well-being and, dare we even say it, happiness? And put forward a proposal of a more integrated approach, not an either-or, but based on a system which looked at both conventional medicine and some of the things that we currently call alternative. So I think that summed up rather quickly a huge range of issues that we've covered in the day.
Thank you, Stephanie. Trevor Gibson, Finance, Innovation and Technology.
Thank you. Yes, and likewise, a very varied day. I certainly learned a lot, which is a sign of a good seminar. Started this morning with a presentation from Britt Worg about a particular type of flood barrier. There are many of these around, but these have been deployed in many UK flooding incidents, and it was quite reassuring to see how effective they were. But perhaps more critically in terms of headline was the work that Britt's doing in relation to bringing the community on board with regard to the deployment of such barriers to make it far more efficient and effective, much quicker deployment than perhaps the traditional agencies can do, and that received a lot of support around the room. Later on that morning, we had Paul Susek. He's down on the bill as a carbon neutral farmer. I think accurately he runs a carbon neutral farm. He took us right the way through to a complete change in his own personal lifestyles from a market research background into buying his own small farm, not being a farmer himself, but very much from the outset moving towards carbon neutral, improving the energy efficiency of buildings, using waste as fuel, micro regeneration in all sorts of aspects, and the ability to provide neighbours, people living in other farm buildings, with energy and indeed food. So again, some fascinating examples and a good summary as well on peak oil, which was one of the drivers behind his personal work. We then had a presentation from Professor Tom Markvart from University of Southampton, where he's Professor of Energy Conversion. He talked about future possibilities about microgrid, replacing the grid that we're all more au fait with in the UK. Lots of small-scale generation plants providing greater resilience, perhaps much more reliance on renewables, the ability to retrofit and change things quickly, but also some challenges that his study's thrown up around ensuring the balance of power when you're relying on things like the sun that doesn't always reliably shine, particularly here, and wind which doesn't always reliably blow. So again, some issues to be managed nationally, but nevertheless some interesting thoughts from Tom. We then had a couple of case studies around waste, but from very different angles. We had Melvin Hargard and Paul Croston from DEFRA talking about the work that they're doing on bringing forward or supporting local authorities and partnerships of private-public partnerships on bringing forward energy from waste plants, the incentives that are currently being offered and reviewed to ensure that that happens, and the essentially consultancy work that they bring to bear to take these ideas through to on the ground. So looking particularly at the planning constraints and so on in individual areas, and encouraging to see how many plans for new facilities are in the pipeline, so to speak, to deal with the future waste problems, but also producing not just energy but also heat, which appears to be where the added value is in terms of economics. We then had Nigel Tyrrell, a fascinating presentation. He's Head of Environment Services, London Borough of Lewisham. I guess people that live and work in London may have seen his Love Lewisham initiative, which came from what he felt was an unloved Lewisham. But they now have integrated technology on iPhones, on Microsoft phones and so on, where people can literally take a photograph of a problem in the area, something that they don't like, whether it's graffiti, some abandoned rubbish, refuse that hasn't been dealt with or whatever. With a simple press of a button on a downloadable app, it's sent to the powers that be, and not only does it get cleaned up very, very quickly, you get a photograph back showing you what it looks like since you sent your photo in. So again, extremely powerful, using people as sensors, if you like, but really getting community engagement in cleaning up Lewisham. And this is being taken up by other London boroughs, and indeed is being looked at London-wide now as part of the build-up to the 2012 Olympics. And finally, we had Henry Boucher, Deputy Chief Investments with Saracen and Partners. Again, a very detailed and fascinating insight around sustainable investing. And again, some real challenges there in the market, you know, noting that there's still lots of investment opportunities in non-sustainable fields, perhaps in the developing worlds where energy production is still reliant on coal and energy use because of the, by definition, these countries are still developing. Energy use is increasing quite dramatically and almost outweighing any efficiencies we're making in the developed world. So some very real challenges there, but some positive opportunities in renewable and related sustainability areas such as water and transport, which he believed are going to be the growth areas over the next few years. So again, a fascinating and varied day.
Thanks, Trevor. Sustainability in practice, David Brown.
Yes, I chaired STREAMe, which was a varied and diverse set of presentations, I would say, all with a very strong sustainability theme. The first presentation, Sustainability Finance in Practice, was given by Dennis Moss at the back there, and he talked about the Boschendale Biosphere Reserve, a very successful project, an excellent example, I think we all felt. The reserve has, Boschendale has been there since 1680s, I think, and over the last 6 years has been developed into this Biosphere Reserve, and there's a 300-year vision moving forwards. And it's clearly sustainable from a whole range of different aspects, the audience felt. The second presentation was on sustainable biofuels from algae. This is the Sea Green project, and that was presented by Professor Minu Patel from Cranfield University. And he talked about the key advantages of microalgae development within the oceans. In a way, microalgae are the holy grail moving forwards. We're not there yet. They're the potential holy grail in the sense that they have a negative carbon balance. They extract CO2 from the atmosphere and indeed a high energy balance so that they're a very efficient biofuel. The big challenge moving ahead is scalability from the current very small scale facilities that there may be, the prototype facilities, up to the full-scale international type approaches to really make a difference. There was then a second presentation on marine renewable technologies, and that was talking about sustainability of wind power, and in particular large-scale offshore wind power generation. That presentation was given by another professor from Cranfield University, Professor Fergal Brennan. He talked in terms of the strong drive to go offshore for wind power generation rather than remain onshore. There's clearly a lack of land offshore, there's a NIMBY factor, and indeed offshore wind power generation is of the order of 40% more efficient than onshore. I think we were heartened to hear that the UK has more installed wind power at present than any other country in the world. And we have grandiose targets set by the last government and also this government. These are 2020 targets where we will need over 6,005 megawatt turbines offshore. We haven't got any yet. These turbines are massive with blades over 120 metres across, and the challenges are really quite immense to achieve anything like that target. There are big construction issues in terms of the height that these turbines have got to be placed and operational maintenance issues associated with the height. The amount of steel involved is immense as well. And as a thought-provoking end to Fergal Brennan's presentation, he talked in terms of these turbines all being propeller-on-a-stick type technology, and perhaps a much better way forward is a vertical axis system. Which has probably got higher power generation, certainly per unit area, and the maintenance issues, because it's low in the water, is going to be much more feasible perhaps moving forwards, but the whole momentum is behind the horizontal axis turbine. The fourth presentation talked in terms of professional services for a sustainable future, and that was given by three presenters from Deloitte. They talked in terms of the importance of life cycle analysis to establish carbon footprints. That's both the embodied carbon footprint and the operational carbon footprint. By the embodied carbon footprint, we mean the materials to go into the building structure, etc., etc. Two examples were given of life cycle carbon footprints. The initial example from the first speaker, Guy Battle, talked in terms of his low carbon baby son and the appropriate nappy use for that son, which was quite an interesting presentation. And then there was a building carbon footprint example given by another of the speakers. Finally, for Deloitte, they talked in terms of sustainability reporting and the appropriate standards that are necessary for consistency in sustainability reporting. Sustainability reporting is voluntary at present, but it would appear that this is going to become, or likely to become, mandatory, certainly for larger UK companies in the near future. The final presentation, which is really a panel format at the end of the day, was on transport sustainability, and in particular on the inter-eco-city concept study, and I think the emphasis is on inter here. And this one considered carbon neutrality throughout all aspects of design, the supply chain and delivery. And full consideration of all aspects of sustainability, including efficient economic drivers, maintaining the integrity of the environment, and full consideration of the human well-being as well. Operation with and in conjunction with the existing initiatives in the host city, transport twinning within other inter-eco-cities, both in UK and Europe, an integration of an extensive range of products and services delivering a vibrant, sustainable community. And an example was given of a new form of carbon neutral air transport. So overall, really a diverse set of presentations throughout the day.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for keeping to your time and for making these very excellent summaries. So I'd like to thank you specifically for your role as chair throughout the day. Secondly, I'd like to thank all the speakers. I don't know how many of them are still here. I don't recognize many, but then I have not had the pleasure of meeting them all. But thank you very much for the hard work that's gone into your presentations, for traveling to London today. We've had some transportation problems south of Peterborough. Quite ironical that Peterborough should come into the picture today. But all made it in time, and we're grateful. We were all expecting snow today, not transport problems. And finally, I'd like to firstly thank the audience here present and the right through the day. We had an excellent turnout. And secondly, I'd like to also thank the online audience that is possibly still with us and for their support during the day. I wish you all a safe and quick trip back home with no interruptions. Thank you all for your participation, and I'd like to invite you for a glass of wine just outside the door there. Thank you very much. But before you go, just a final word of thank you to the team sitting at the back there, making the online presentations possible, archiving what has happened here today right across the conference, and for the hard organizing and support work that's gone into making this a very enjoyable event. Thank you very much.